Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, October 9th. I'm Ray Graff. Today, it's the Copyright Forum. And joining us to answer your questions about protecting your writing, music, and art are Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood. So if you have a question about copyright law, fair use, what's in the public domain, maybe things related to this darned AI business, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also email your copyright questions to voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Paul, Polly, Bill, and your intellectual property questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the Copyright Forum today. Joining us, Paul Rapp, an intellectual property lawyer and writer. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. Bill Westwood, one of the country's leading medical illustrators and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators, and Polly Law, past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She is a designer, illustrator, and artist whose works are in numerous private collections and represented by galleries in Rhinebeck, New York, and Provincetown, and Nantucket, Massachusetts. You have a question about intellectual property? Feel free. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org as we roll along. Hello, gang. How are we doing?
Hello,
good.
Ray.
Good.
Exciting stuff. I understand, Paul Rapp, you came yesterday, too, for the show.
Yes, I did. That's how much I like this show.
You know, you should have just stopped it. I mean, well, anyway, I'm glad you all made it on the correct day. For a minute, I thought, oh, gosh, I screwed up, and then that's a billable hour, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, usually we do this on Tuesday, don't we?
Yes.
And so I just, like, automatically got in the car and drove to all. I was having lunch with my friend Chuck, so it was fine.
Yeah.
It wasn't wasted, but... Then I think I must have miscalendered. I went home, and there it is on my calendar for today.
You see, there you
are. But he called me, and he said, aren't we supposed to be getting together? And I panicked and had to back up and look at my calendar.
It was the car show yesterday. You would have been welcome. You could have come and sat around.
Yeah.
And, I saw this. I just found a couple things before the show. This one just makes me nauseous. It's from Wyoming, buckrail.com, which has information about... some counties in Wyoming. And here it is, quoted, "Library cancels Harry Potter programming over copyright issue. It's a sad day for little witches and wizards in Jackson Hole. The Teton County Library's slate of Harry Potter programming has been canceled due to copyright infringement." TCL announced the news on Wednesday, October 2nd, said it had received a cease and desist letter from Warner Brothers Entertainment, which owns and controls all things Potter. Come on. I know you're an attorney and you have to defend your ilk, but jeepers, creepers, what the heck?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's just,
well, keep
know.
In mind that was Warner Brothers that was filing that, not the attorneys.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like Disney. Disney would do something.
Yeah, Disney would do something like that.
But
yeah.
Warner Brothers, Harry Potter. I mean, I had a client that did a whole Harry Potter festival, a multi-day festival up in North Adams a few years ago, and, you know, nobody bothered him.
Yeah.
It just
sounds to me like some junior-level attorney at Warner Brothers latched onto this and thought they could, make their name.
True. Keep in mind it's an allegation of infringement. We don't know what's going to happen. You know, it could very well be that it's adjudicated as fair use.
Well, they're not doing it, though.
I know. They've canceled it now, but they might want to do it next year.
Cease and desist. I mean, isn't it? Okay. First of all, is the library in Jackson Hole going to make any money from this? Probably not.
No.
And then the other thing is, isn't it a bad look for the big entertainment company to come after a library, for Pete's sake?
Yeah.
Well, they don't care.
I mean, big media thinks that libraries are the enemy. you know, and they're going after libraries for ebooks and all that kind of stuff all the time. But an event like this is going to encourage people to read the Harry Potter books. It's going to encourage little kids to get curious and go home and read instead of having their hopes and dreams dashed.
All right. Well, enough outrage on that one. This is one that's from, I think, MSN. It's been all around. Artist sues over copyright rejection, a rejection for award-winning artwork generated by AI. This is dated, I don't have the date, but it's recently.
Award-winning.
Oh, yeah. And it said, on Thursday, artist Jason M. Allen requested that a Colorado federal court reverse a U.S. Copyright Office decision to reject copyright protection for an award-winning image he made using AI. In the suit, Allen claims that he should receive copyright for his piece as an expression of his creativity. He applied for copyright registration for the work depicting a futuristic royal court, which won the state's art fair competition in 2022. And it was rejected.
Oh,
well, the position of the Copyright Office and the law, the way the law is written, or the act is written, is that work has to be created by a human being. And AI right now is outside of that bubble. And the Copyright Office right now is rejecting anything generated by AI. They have made a few little carve-outs where you could say part of it was, for example, the artwork.
Well, you have to designate that
You have to
part.
Designate it, yeah. Yes. But part of it, like the artwork, was done by AI, so that's not copyrightable. But if you wrote a story to go along with that, it is copyrightable.
But, you know, the thing, there was one thing in the article where the guy said he spent thousands of hours testing various prompts before he got the image that he wanted. And I think there's going to be a point where if you spend a thousand hours coming up with different prompts to get the machine to do something that in your head you want it to do. But, you know, and this sounds like it's on the border of that.
Let's go and not call it AI. If you are using, what do they call it, found art or whatever, and you're making a collage, okay, you're not generating the bits for that, but you're putting it in the piece in the places you want.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference?
That's a good point.
You're hand making that, though. That's different. That's different.
Well,
and also,
collage has always been a kind of a murky area for copyright.
Right. But keep in mind too that for all of those prompts he had to go through, that was very early on in the AI systems. And so I doubt that you would have to make that many prompts today to generate the same thing or same type of thing.
That's true. But I mean, I think there's going to be a point where they're going to, you know, where you draw the line, it's going to be impossible.
Yeah, that might be true. I mean, I don't think any of us can predict that because AI is a coming thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, soon the robots will be doing everything for us and we'll be fine. Hey, listen, let's take one call. It's on this topic and then we'll take a break and then we will start in earnest with the emails and phone calls. 800-348-2551. If you have a question for the Copyright Forum, Jason is in Beacon. Jason, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Really appreciate your time to taking this question. I remember reading a few months back about a lawsuit filed by multiple parties, artists, newspapers, et cetera, claiming that the training of AIs, these large language models, was a giant form of intellectual property theft, and that these AIs are basically pilfering all this data and information and hard work done over the years by writers and journalists and artists. Wanted to know what the status of those lawsuits are, what the prospects for those lawsuits are, or will AI just get to consume everything and spit it back out without ever having to pay the content creators?
Okay.
I went through all of the current AI lawsuits, and the list is so long. I was going to print it out and bring it, but I decided against it because it was just, it would have, you know, there's so many lawsuits. The one you're speaking of, I believe, I'm blanking out.
That's all right, man.
Most of them that I've heard of have crashed and burned.
Well, no, no. One, a federal judge just okayed parts of one.
Okay.
Just in August, I believe, that is moving forward. One of the problem with what the AI companies are doing, or at least they're being accused of doing, is scraping. In other words, going in, for example, if you want to create artwork that looks like Polly Law, you go in, you get all her artwork, you scrape that, and then you try to train your AI program to come up with something that could look like Polly Law or someone mm-hmm. else. And that's where the accusations of infringement are occurring. It's going to be a big jump to prove that in a court of law.
Yeah, and style has never been protectable.
Correct.
You know, so, yeah. You know, the machines are learning the same way. I mean, I've said this before. The machines are basically learning the same way people learn. You know, if you want to be an abstract artist, you study Picasso and you study Jasper Johns and you study all that, you know, and then you come up with something that could be like them. But
then in the long run, you can create your own original work, whereas I don't think AI can. AI is always going to rely on that work that they scraped.
That's because it's a machine.
It scraped. I apologize. Yeah.
All right, listen, we have to take a break here. Jason, thank you very much for getting us started. The number here is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. If you have a copyright question for Paul, Bill, and Polly, we'll be back. The great Charlie Parker here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. If you have a question for the Copyright Forum today, Polly Law, Bill Westwood, and Paul Rapp are here to answer your questions. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And let's take a couple of emails here. Richie in Greenwich writes, I have two questions related to fair use. I created an audio recording using music I wrote and perform and added audio captured by police scanner radio during mass shooting events. Sounds like a real light tune. Question, is the scanner radio protected under copyright? That's question one.
No.
It's free speech.
Now, I thought that there was a law passed in the Reagan administration where you could not transcribe or record scanner police activity.
I don't know. I'm not that old, Ray.
Yeah. But that has nothing to do with copyright. I mean, the copyright holder would be the people speaking.
Yeah.
But you know, they don't do so with any expectation that they're going to own their stuff. I can't imagine somebody, and the recording belongs to.
Well, also, it's a government entity, so they can't hold a copyright.
Yeah.
All right, second question from Richie in Greenwich. Is the scanner – oh, wait, that's the first one. Here's the second one. Oh, here's what happened. Okay, they're fixing the coffee machine. Usually I get a cup of coffee about 20 after 1 just to make sure I have enough juice left for the show. And the guy's still working on it, so good luck, people. Second question. In a similar audio piece I'm now creating, I want to use text from Jack Smith's recent court filing outlining the crimes he is charging the defendant with. Is this document in the public domain, and can I use it?
Yes, you can.
Yes.
Yes, you can. My friend Evan Mack did an opera using the libretto was Ruth Bader Ginsburg's decision.
Dissent.
Her decision upholding gay marriage.
Really?
And they did it at Glimmer Glass, and she was in attendance.
No, cool. And she was fine with that?
Yeah.
All right. Number here is 800-348-2551 if you have some intellectual property worth protecting. Bill Westwood, Paul Rapp, and Polly Law are here. David writes, my plan is to open a place for gearheads in Western Mass, mainly focusing on vintage automobiles. New old cars will also be featured.
Wasn't
and for
that
sale.
Tuesday's show?
Ah, but wait. New old cars will also be featured and for sale. As a means of making this a jolly good place, I would like to feature movies free to the public, including popcorn. Think Grand Prix, which was what, James Garner, 66, and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, that classic. Can I do this without messing with the mouse?
There are, well, if it's fallen into the public domain, yes, but...
Most of these probably haven't.
Those are in the 60s.
Too recent.
But you can get licenses, you know, for limited uses, which would be fairly inexpensive, I would think.
Yeah, you would need to, you would be liable if you just use them, I think, without getting a license.
Yeah.
Okay. This is from Mike in Rexford. I took a great photo of a bird with my, that's another show. I took a great photo of a bird with my iPhone recently. I'd like to get the photo copyrighted so that I can show it around freely. How do I get the photo copyrighted?
Copyright.gov.
First of all, it's copyrighted as soon as you take it.
Yeah, you can show it around freely right now.
But if you don't want people using it, then I would recommend registering it with the Copyright Office at copyright.gov.
Okay. It's fast and it's easy and it's cheap.
Right. Relatively, yes.
I just deleted one more question, but I think I remember it. My short-term memory being what it is, I got to spit it out now. Rich wants to know, ASCAP, how do people get involved with it? The little guy, not Madonna or somebody else, but how does that work?
You register your songs. You pick ASCAP, BMI, or CSAC, and there's a couple other smaller players. ASCAP and BMI are the main ones. I think CSAC, you need to be invited. You just go to their site and you sign up as a songwriter and you input the songs that you've written.
All right.
And it's that simple.
Number here is 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum. Polly Law, Bill Westwood, and Paul Rapp are with us. Let's go to Chris in Castleton. Chris, you're on.
Hi. I think the question that I had just got answered, but I didn't catch it. As pertaining to songs and poetry that I've written that I've always wanted to copyright. I've got basically, years worth, and I think they're worth something.
Well, as Bill said, they are technically copyrighted the minute you finish them, but to register them to help protect them, you need to go to copyright.gov.
Okay.
And you create an account.
Fantastic.
You file for registration, and they 3 months later or so, they give you a registration.
And they have video tutorials that are pretty helpful.
On how to
and asking for help, a little less so, but the video tutorials are pretty good if you're having I mean, if you're good on the internet and you're good with cyberspace, you'll figure it out pretty quickly.
Actually, Paul, I've had pretty good luck calling them.
Have you?
Yeah, middle of the week, not Monday or Friday.
Okay. I mean, I have it with the trademark office. They're great, but the copyright office, not so much.
Yeah.
All right. Chris.
Okay. Thanks. Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Appreciate the call. By the way, I saw an item. I didn't print it out because we don't really do Korean copyright law here. Maybe you do, Paul. But, the K-pop groups, right? It's like the monkeys. They're put together by organizations. Uh-huh. Listen, I'm not disparaging it. I took my daughters to see Twice at the Meadowlands a couple summers ago.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Father of the year. Came to work the next day. But
the bar was open, right?
No. I got to drive from Jersey.
Oh, that's right.
But the thing is, they were great. But there was a lawsuit pending, apparently, in Korea where the choreography is copyrighted. Can you copyright physical motion in this country?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Choreography is, I think it's explicitly stated in the things that, in the Copyright Act, as things you can protect.
Do you have to do lab annotation?
You can do that, or you can just give them a video of, there have been a number of, there was a Martha Graham case that everybody, you take copyright law in law school, there's this Martha Graham case. I don't remember what it was about, but it was about copyrighted choreography.
So interesting. And so, I mean, how do you document it? Well, you said something, some...
Lab annotation. It's an alphabet of marks that you use to indicate movement. And you can notate a whole dance. And that way, if you don't have a videotape of a Martha Graham choreography, you can reconstruct it.
It's like musical notation for dance.
This is fascinating. So someone who is proficient, by the way, this is not the topic of the show, but I'm just interested.
I've heard you're a hell of a dancer.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you're proficient at reading, like a sight reader is, in music, you can actually just take a piece of this notation and do a dance.
Yes.
That is crazy talk. And then so everybody, if this is a multi-person ballet, they'll all have their own charts.
Theoretically, it could, yeah.
That is amazing. I never knew.
A few years ago, I don't know if it was Michael Jordan or some basketball player tried to copyright his signature move.
In basketball.
In basketball.
It would be owned by the NBA, right?
As choreography. And the copyright office said, nice try.
All right.
Maybe not.
Let's go back to our... Well, go ahead.
I did want to ask you, going back to the ASCAP, is there a fee to register your work with ASCAP?
It's been a while since I've looked at it. I think BMI is free, but and ASCAP has a nominal fee, I believe. It may be different now. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Number to call here is 800-348-2551 if you would like to ask a copyright question of our team today. Let's go to Mario in Albany. You're up.
Hello.
Who is this?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Who's calling? It's a radio show.
Mario.
Yeah, how you doing, man? Go.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I'm writing a book, and I want to paraphrase quotes, for example, from Dante, from a copyrighted book. If I paraphrase it, I know how to paraphrase, but how do I give the quotation? Do I italicize it? Do I quote it in quotation marks? Do I say Dante, or do I say the author from the book?
From the translation you're talking about. Because Dante's work itself in Italian is way out of copyright.
Yeah, way in the public domain. I mean, you can, you know, depending on how you're using it, it might be fair use. You might be able to directly quote limited portions of it. But if you're paraphrasing it, just say you're paraphrasing it and cite the you know, quote Dante, say, as Dante said, you know, and translations get really limited protection, but they do get protection. So, you know, if you go and you quote a big hunk of it, you might be running afoul. But you could
just a couple of sentences. Do I say, I don't need to say paraphrase. Do I say at the end of the paraphrase Dante?
You just say to paraphrase Dante and then paraphrase away. If you're only doing a couple sentences, I think you're probably going to be okay doing a direct quote and then citing this translation, this particular translation of
Maybe
of Dante.
Maybe in the acknowledgments.
Well, you could cite it in the footnote.
Or as an acknowledgment.
I also want to I would like to quote the song by Lennon, Imagine, but that's copyrighted and that's quite expensive. How do I do that? Can I paraphrase that a couple of lines?
Well, that would lose its effect if you were paraphrasing, you know, a John Lennon lyric.
But
depending on how you use it, it could be fair use.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, if you're only doing a couple of lines, I would, you know, just go ahead and if someone squawks, you know, apologize and beg for forgiveness.
Well,
I
think that would fall pretty squarely on fair use. I can't see how.
What is fair use? Could you please explain that?
It's where limited infringement is allowable because it advances learning and educational purposes and critical purposes. You know, if you know my advice to authors has always been. If it's part of the narrative of the book, you know, you walk into a bar and Imagine is playing on the, you know, on the jukebox and you quote a couple of lines as part of, you know, or if a singer's in a band and they're covering Imagine and you quote a couple of lines, it's part of the narrative and that's fair use. Yeah. If you do just a lyric like in a box on the top of the page as window dressing, like Stephen King always does at the beginning of his chapters. That is something you probably want to get a license for. You know, it's right. Different in the use.
All right, Mario, thanks a lot for the call. Now, you know, not to question the lawyer too much here, but you said it's okay to quote directly in a limited fashion. Limited's very vague. Is this designed to make sure that you guys stay in business?
Well, absolutely. Thank you, Congress.
Yeah.
But
the check's in the mail.
One of the fair use factors is that you don't use any more than you absolutely need to make your point.
That's so vague, man.
Well,
it is.
Everything about fair use is vague.
Yeah.
And on purpose. And even the court decisions
are case specific
and often vague. I tell people if you're dilly-dallying with fair use, you're walking right into a swamp without waders, you know.
Hmm. Yeah. All right, this is a good email here. It comes in at voxpop@wamc.org. You can send your emails to that. We'll get back to the phones in a minute. This is from James. Because of the advancement in AI technology, it's now possible for the use and or misuse of a person's voice. For example, someone could record the voice of our beloved Ray Graff. One F there, James. Next time. And with the help of AI, they could manipulate Ray's voice to be used in commercials online or for anything. Now that this is possible, how can Ray, voice actors, or anybody protect themselves? How would they even know if someone, some baddie out there, has done it?
There is a current lawsuit. I mentioned I went through all those lawsuits. Pardon me. A current lawsuit by a number of voice actors, who are suing for that very thing, claiming that I've forgotten the defendant, but has been recording their voices, having AI put them out, and they're using them for different purposes.
Uh-huh.
So that is currently an active lawsuit as we speak.
But there was a famous lawsuit years ago where some advertising agency hired someone to sound like...
I'm going to say Tom Waits.
Well, but this was a female...
Bette Midler, I think. Bette Midler sounded like...
It was like Stevie Nicks or something okay. like that. And the original artist sued because, you know, she wasn't being paid to promote this product, but it sounded like she was
promoting it.
And there are, I think... legislation in the states. I don't think there's anything federal yet, but that outlaw using AI for that very purpose.
Yeah, there is something going on. Yeah.
You got to keep the voiceover people in business because I used to do that.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, it's like stealing. You go in, you read a few lines, cha-ching. You know what I mean? So we got to keep that going. Kevin in Red Hook. Kevin, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
By the way, Ray, you're hilarious.
Oh, thank you.
I just love your sense of humor.
I'll be here all week.
Try the veal.
Yeah.
So my question is, if let's say you have three songs, could you submit a recording of the three songs under one copyright and then thereby have all three songs copyrighted?
If they are unpublished or if they're all being released together... as an album, yes. If they're just separate songs that are kind of
all original,
But if they're all if they're not related commercially, and if they've already been out, if you've already published them, if you've already sent them to Spotify and printed CDs as a single. You can. I mean, this is all on copyright.gov. They can explain to you about multiple filings. There's a fairly new category for music albums where you can, I think, do up to 20 songs on one application. But they all have to be released, as an album.
But that's for the recording, right? In other words, the songs
and
are
the,
separate.
You'll get both the recording and the songwriting. And the songwriting has to be uniform. It has to be the same person or people on all the songs.
But now, if Kevin sent three songs in and said, this is going to be my EP, and these are the three songs, and what if he doesn't release it? When you go to that copyright site, it says, what date is this released? If there's no release date?
Just you file it as an unpublished work.
Okay. Yeah, those would have to be unpublished anyway in order to register multiple pieces under one application.
Kevin, you want to follow up?
Oh, you guys are so good. Nothing more.
All right, I'll follow up for you. So Kevin puts these three songs out, makes up an album title, and then later... he really wants to do an album, but feature one or two of these songs, they're copyrighted already, are they not?
They're registered already.
They're registered.
They're registered already, but you know they will let you register the new album even if
separately.
Even if it has songs on it that have been previously released elsewhere.
In music, would you register that as a derivative or just another registration?
Just another registration, okay. I think. You know, especially if it's the same recording, if it's a different recording. You know, you could mention that it's a derivative work, but
okay.
Why bother?
All right, just curious. I know more about the graphic works as opposed to music.
You know everything about the graphic.
What are you working on now, by the way?
Spleens?
Spleen? you know, I did a podiatry show on Monday, and they talk about hammer toes. I don't even know what they look like. Can you draw me a hammer toe?
I'll send you pictures. I've already done it.
On second thought, I withdraw the record. Let's take. We'll
if you
it.
Haven't seen Bill's work, it's mind blowing.
No, I have. It is. But
especially
a bunion,
my livers.
All right, let's take a break here. 800-348-2551. Copyrights a go go. Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, and Polly Law and your intellectual ish property. Coming up. Has 1,000 eyes. Hey, everybody, thanks for a great job this morning. Everybody who pledged during our lockbox pitching this morning, fantastic work. We're closing in on the $400,000 mark in the drive. You can make a pledge anytime, 24/7, 365 days a year at WAMC.org. If you value anything that you hear on this radio station, just remember we depend on you, WAMC.org. Copyright Forum today, Ray Graff with you, Polly Law, Bill Westwood, and Paul Rapp join us. And to Columbia County we go. Richard, you're on.
Hello.
Well.
Hi. First off, I wanted to thank you for taking my call.
Sure bet.
I wanted to know if there's a sort of comprehensive book about copyrights that you would recommend to someone starting out?
Well, I would recommend, I don't know the title of it anymore, but Tag Crawford has written several books on copyright for visual artists.
There's another book. Uh-huh. There's another good book by Edward Greenberg, Esquire, and I'm blanking out on the name, old age. It's very good. He and a photographer have put together a book that is pretty good. I think also the Graphic Artists Guild
Handbook of Pricing and Ethical Guidelines.
And Ethical Guidelines has some really good basic information about copyright. And you don't even have to buy the newest one. You can buy last year's for a little less money, I suspect, and it'll have all that basic copyright information in it.
My friend Casey Ray just published, I think last year or the year before, a book called Digital Copyright. And it's very conversational. He's very funny. He's a very good writer. And he'll teach you all the copyright basics, but he'll apply them to the digital world, which is kind of where it's at right now. So. It's called Digital Copyright.
Yeah, if you just Google copyright books, there's just a huge number of them out there today that are quite good and quite thorough.
That you can probably get from your library.
Yeah. And you read after the Harry Potter night.
Yeah.
Read the user reviews, and it'll tell you how good or how bad the book is.
Okay.
It'd be a really good workshop in a library.
There you go.
Have about copyrights.
All right.
In answer to your second question, no.
Yeah. do you know what it is?
I don't know what it is. She's...
If someone bought artwork, could they make prints without the artist's permission?
No.
No, the copyright and the object are two separate entities.
All right. Hey, Nostradamus, why don't we let the caller ask the question? Richard, you want to follow up?
No, it's I love your shows.
Hey, thank you.
And I hope to continue to support when I can.
Hey, really appreciate that sentiment. Richard, thank you very much. It's the Copyright Forum with Bill Westwood, Polly Law, at Paul Rapp. And let's go to Hudson. It's James' turn. James, hello.
Hi. Those two, you just referred to two rather well-known law cases on vocal copyright.
Yeah.
And they were Tom Waits and Bette Midler. And yeah. I believe they both won.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, Tom Waits has won several times in Europe. All of his cases, I believe, take place in Europe because he's a hero there, and nobody here really knows who he is. But Bette Midler, it was people singing, you know, in the style, and it was indistinct. But this was not AI. This was 20, 30 years ago.
No, people actually hired the hired singers. But yeah, and Bette Midler also did it, and she won also, I think.
Yeah, she did. She sure did.
All right, James, thanks a lot. Rob writes in about that topic. Tom Waits won his lawsuit, which we have ascertained. One of the points made was writers in his contracts exist to support his voice. By the way, Paul Rapp, let's go back to 1966. The Knickerbockers sounded lies. Great song.
Everybody thought they were the Beatles.
It sounded exactly like the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
How can you say, okay, that's my sound? I mean, everybody...
They didn't pass themselves off as the Beatles. So, you know, if...
No harm, no foul.
There was a band, when Beatlemania hit, there was a band from the United States that called themselves the Beatles, B-E-E-T-L-E-S.
Yeah.
And they booked a huge tour of South America.
Yeah.
And, like, by the third date, everybody was onto them.
Oh.
And they got sent home. But, you know, that... That's impersonation. It's a difference between
forgery, you know, and
forgery and impersonation.
Let me understand this then. Other music companies were hiring soundalikes of Tom Waits and calling him Tom Waits.
No, it was in commercial usage.
It was like advertising potato chips or something like that. And it sounded, I don't even think they said this is Tom Waits, but his voice was so distinctive.
I see.
That everyone thought it was.
The woman I was thinking of, the person she was imitating was the woman who did Betty Davis Eyes.
Oh,
Kim Carnes.
Yeah. Kim Carnes. That was.
And what happened? Brenda Vaccaro sued? Hey, on the other side, says Rob, Harley Davidson lost to Honda when they sued defending, quote, their sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, Harley tried to register its sound as copyrightable, and the court said, no, this is not the kind of thing that's copyrightable.
Interesting.
You know, and I don't know if Harley Davidson's position was that crazy. I mean, it sounds like a Harley sounds
it
like a
sure
Harley.
It sure does.
And then Honda's going out of their way to make theirs sound like a Harley. I mean, you know, that one could have been a coin flip, you know.
Interesting.
Listen, one of the things that makes this show and copyright fun and interesting and perplexing is that it is vague.
Yeah.
You know, all the laws about copyright are... Everything you think is clear cut can be upended by any court, anytime, anywhere.
It's so great. Why didn't I go to law school? I mean, God, the money must be insane.
It's never too late,
Ray. Oh, I think most things are too late. Let's go to Gary in Sunderland, Massachusetts. Gary, you're on.
Hi there. I have a question about copywriting music. My wife writes some songs. And none of them are actually on any kind of commercially available recording. And she hasn't anything written down other than some, like, little notation, but she hasn't actually scored them on notation paper. And she's under the impression, and she may well be right, that she can't really copyright them if all she could submit would be a recording of her singing them.
No, that's not true. You can send them an MP3 of her singing the song, and they'll accept that as
to register.
And what would the actual process be in that case?
You go to copyright.gov, you start
an account.
If she's not planning on releasing them commercially, there's really no point in registering
the
copyright.
Well, she does share them. She does perform them places, and other people are now singing them, not professionally, but sharing them with others. And, you know, at some point somebody could hear it and go, like, that's really pretty. I think I'll record that. And boom, all of a sudden it could be their song.
Okay, so... She should know that when she creates it, it's copyrighted.
When it's recorded. In fixed form.
But what she wants to do is to register these with the Copyright Office.
And that, and would she, if she has like a dozen songs, which actually at this point she's probably got maybe 15 or so, would she need to do each one separately, or can she do like a bulk submission?
She can do, I think, up to 10 unpublished works.
For graphic works, I don't know what it is for songs.
I think it is with music, too. With photographs, it's like hundreds, but for music...
750 to be exact.
Thank you.
All right. Gary, thanks a lot.
What's the basic cost for doing that?
I go to the website and
they'll give you the cost.
Yeah, it's $65 or $85 for, 10 unpublished works.
Right.
Something like
I think that's correct.
Yeah. All right, Gary, thanks a lot. 800-348-2551. Got through almost the whole show, and I haven't given the fund drive number once, which is the first time it's happened in a while.
Stop and do that.
People are going to call the fund drive number and ask copyright questions.
You think they will? I'm guessing maybe. Well, you never know. Steve writes in, great show. Just want to mention John Lennon's birthday since we're mentioning his songs. There you are.
Yes, it is.
All right. Happy birthday.
He would have been 83, 85.
Wow.
Like that. Imagine that.
Imagine Duh. That. That's Duh. Very clever, right? You see what you did?
Did you get permission to do that?
You know what?
Imagine there's no birthdays.
Imagine there's no copyright for them. Let's keep it going. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We got a couple calls here on the line. Anything somebody want to bring up while the screener is doing her job?
2 weeks ago, I saw a news item that Taylor Swift was being sued for copyright infringement based on one of Bruno Mars's songs.
Huh.
Now, the thing was, Bruno Mars is one of those guys that sold his entire catalog to a private equity firm. Bruno Mars wouldn't have sued Taylor Swift.
Well, how do you know?
Himself.
Bruno Mars has lifted a lot of music from me. You ever saw his halftime show? Oh, that's James Brown. That's Prince. That's this and that. You know.
But, Taylor doesn't need to rip off anybody for her songs. But now these private equity firms are buying up catalogs and they're having unrestrained, they are using them as profit centers for bringing what
frivolous
I'm presuming
lawsuits.
Are baseless,
Interesting.
Lawsuits, and that's distressing to me.
Is it distressing to you, Polly?
Yes. No, it is, because they also are sending out infringement notices to visual artists.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Why don't we go back to the phones? Tom is in New Paltz. Hello, Tom. You're on.
Hi. Yeah, my question is about actually a piece of artwork or a design and how I could copyright it. It's I use it on T-shirts. I use it on stickers, things of that sort.
Well, it depends on how you register it, because there is a difference between registering an illustration or a painting and a piece of graphic design.
Depending on the graphic design.
Yeah. Some graphic design is registerable and some is not. And the only way to find out is to try to register it.
Yeah. Keep in mind, too, that you've created it, so you own the copyright to it. The key to protecting it now is to register it with the Copyright Office.
Yeah. I mean, I've tried to register designs on T-shirts and had them rejected because they said there's not enough copyrightable material on it, or a short phrase. Somebody's got like a short 3 or 4 word phrase. You can't copyright something like that because it's too small. What you can do, you could possibly get a trademark, which is a whole different thing.
But
you have
expensive,
to.
Right?
You're gonna if you have like a short phrase, you're gonna have to call your company that short phrase that's on your T-shirt. It's everything sucks on your T-shirt with a little hang tag that says this is made by the Everything Sucks Company, because that's what trademarks do. They protect commercial sources.
All right, Tom, thanks a lot. Now, when you were trying to register these shirts, and they said there's not enough copyrightable material, if on that given day when your envelope was opened, somebody else had done it, opened it and taken a look, might you, in other words, is it sort of subjective enough that you may have squeaked through?
Yeah, especially this one. It was a drawing of the egg in downtown Albany,
right,
with the words Albany's excellent.
Oh.
And it was pleasing, and it was nice colors and the selection. It was, you know, there's enough there, I think, to copyright. But the problem with the copyright office, you spend, I think at the time it was $30 for your application, and then they reject it. And if you want to challenge it, then it's like $750.
Wow.
You know,
what a racket.
Yeah. And so, you know, I said to my guy, you know, he said, I'm not going to make that much on this T-shirt,
yeah,
you know, in the next year. So let's forget it, you know.
All right. Let's go to Kingston. Christopher, you're on.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much for taking my call. My question is, I produced a very short radio feature, 60-second feature on climate change and, you know, the risks associated with it, really designed to enhance awareness of the subject. And it's a nonprofit, labor of love kind of thing. And in researching the content, you know, we go through hundreds of articles that are on different online sources or what have you. And when we, you know, get an idea from one of those articles and we incorporate it within the feature and then cite the article by saying, you know, as reported in such and such. And I was wondering, you know, if you could provide some clarity on what, you know, on what the protocols and rules are around, you know, sufficient citing of works and whether that's sufficient to, you know, to cover to
fair
cover
use.
Yeah, it sounds like fair use. I mean, it's news reporting, it's educational, it's scholarly, and so you can quote away. And, you know, attribution is really up to you. It's really not a legal issue as much as it is a professional matter of professional courtesy.
Yeah, sort of ethics and courtesy, yeah, to cite whoever you're drawing the information from.
But there's no particular form, you know, and how you want to cite it, just as long as it's reasonable, the person's going to hear it is going to know where it came from.
Yeah, I would consider registering those podcasts.
Modules,
whatever, to protect them, because you never know when somebody might come back.
As a serial?
I haven't done that.
But if they're
thing.
Already broadcast, they're published.
Right.
So they can't be gamed,
yeah,
as a
no,
unpublished.
You'd have to do them. You'd have to do them each time.
You might have a serial, maybe.
Well, quite
I think
honestly,
a serial.
We don't
a
mind if people use them, because
that's what you want, yeah.
Okay.
We don't mind if people use them.
Yeah, you want it to go viral, yeah.
Okay.
Good for you.
All right. Well,
absolutely.
Christopher, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Go to Kingston, and it's John. And John, you're on.
Thank you very much. I have a question on copyright related to a book, a reference book. My father published a reference book in the 1990s. He passed away in 2007. The book is out of print, although there's still call for it. I still find people looking for a way to get a copy, and some of the used copies are selling for a lot of money. There have been suggestions for reprinting it, but I'd like to be involved in that. I would like to be the copyright holder for it, where at least I could have some control over the quality of printing if it does get reprinted. How does that come about, or does it?
Well, it's all going to come down to the publishing agreement your father had with his publisher. And, you know, who owned the copyright and what happens when it goes out of print. And things can go an awful lot of different ways. But, you know, oftentimes if a book has gone out of print, you know, the author or the copyright holder, you know, can write a letter and say, put this back into print. And if they don't do it in six months,
yeah, or
it
you
reverts.
Can, or you can reclaim it, yeah, and get it reverted. Yeah.
Yeah.
But do you have...
Well, how do I do that?
Do you have any of the original... contractual information that your father...
Do you have a copy of your contract?
No.
Is the publisher still in business?
Yes.
I would contact the publisher and try to get a copy of whatever contractual information was there. In the book, does it say on the copyright page, does it say copyright next to your father's name, or does it list copyright next to the publisher's name?
That's a good question. I don't have a copy in front of me here.
Okay, well, we're out of time anyway, John. We'll have to pick this one up next time. Appreciate the call. All right, Polly Law, how do people find you online, et cetera?
Well, the best way, frankly, is on Instagram, at ArtWordsT.
ArtWordsT, like drinking tea?
Like drinking tea.
Okay. Paul Rapp, how do we find you?
Well, you could go to West Kill Supply Tap Room.
Yeah, that's
right. Okay. That's 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, look at the time.
Paul@paulrap.com.
Bill Westwood.
Westwoodmedical.com.
Okay. Yeah. You're all dismissed. Thank you all for being here. Support comes from the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, offering creative workshops and tours for all ages. Open Thursday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Learn more at HydeCollection.org. At the tap room. He's a lawyer, for Pete's sake. Mountain Laurel Waldorf School, New Paltz, focused on clear thinking, balanced emotions, empathy for all, and a love of meaningful work. Now enrolling parent-child through eighth grade. Open house at Puppet Show, October 26th, 10 to noon, mountainlaurel.org. And ArtSpark, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing artists and arts nonprofits with digital marketing services, web design, consultations, and more. ArtSpark.com. Once again, thanks to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for being here. Thank you for listening. Terrific questions today. Appreciate them. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Andrea Leon screened the calls. Thanks, Andrea. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, boy. Tomorrow, the Gardeners return. We'll see you, too.